This is David Williams working with the Whitley Oral History Group, talking to Terence Howe about his memories of Great Whitley. It's the 20th of August 2014. Terence, tell us what you can about Great Whitley.
David, well, my first thing I can tell you, I was born in Great Whitley in 1946. I was born at 8 Stairport Road. I can remember my mum telling me, when I was born, she lay in bed at number 8, and it happened to be on Easter Monday. And in those days, they had a hill climb, the Red Marley hill climb. And Mum always used to say she lay in bed because you hear the motorbikes going up and down Red Marley. We have great memories of Red Marley. In those days, my granddad, Mr. Robert Miller, used to open up his garden and he would take in motorbikes, push bikes. You can park here sort of thing for threepence, sixpence. He used to get himself a bit of pocket money.
As I remember, Terence, you used to clear Red Marley Hill climb.
Yes, you're correct there, David. In those days, when I was born, the hill climb was actually cleared by a man called Ginger Smallman. Now, Ginger Smallman used to clear the hill climb for years and years and years. And when he passed away, Dad decided he would take it on. Dad and I done it up until the time his hill climb finished. Now, I think that was round about 1970.
70 or 71,
70 or 70 was the last one. I can remember Dad and I having a great effort because we always used to cut the brambles and everything off the track. And I can remember in those days, I think Dad was paid a measly sum of £10 for doing the job. And then they cancelled it. And I can always remember Dad, you know, they gave him the money for his time. But then Red Marley was gone, finished. But it was reopened in 2000.
That's right.
By local chaps who cleared the track and run it.
That £10 was well earned, given the steepness Red Marley.
It was not a 5 minute job. It wasn't. You know, you spend weeks and weeks up there, you know, clearing the track, cutting the brambles back and one thing and another. No, it was quite hard work in those days. Mm. Yeah. But it wasn't so much cutting the stuff from up the on the track for the actual event. Then Dad had to turn around and pick all the paper up and, you know, and that was a daunting task. But when you look at it these days, for £10, it doesn't seem a lot really, does it?
No, that's right. That's right. So as a child like me, you'll remember all the cars coming to park in Mr. Quarterman's field.
Yes. I can remember, you know, the field full of cars. I can remember one year they had a terrible cloudburst. Cars were stuck in the field. They had tractors pulling them out. You know, it made quite a mess of Quarterman's field. But no, it was a big event and it was missed. But it is running again now at Walsgrove Farm.
Yeah.
Going off the subject of there, we can go on to my childhood, which was spent at Great Whitley School. As I can remember, the first headmaster there was a Mr. Salmon, if I got this right. And I went through my childhood there until I went to Stairport-on-Severn School. Bar for a blips, when I was about 9, I had a serious road accident at the 100 House Hotel, where a friend of mine, which was Tommy Cook, which is now one of the founder members of the Red Marley Hill Climb, we were visiting the local petrol station for sweets after school, both on pushbikes, Tommy and I. Tom went round a lorry, which was on the weighbridge at the 100 House. I went round behind him. Tommy shouted, "There's a car's coming," and that's the last I can remember about it. And I was seriously injured. I had broken arms, no broken legs, but I spent about 2 months in hospital afterwards. After I recovered from there, I went on to go back to the junior school at Great Whitley. Didn't pass the 11 plus, as a lot of people didn't, and went to Stourport-on-Severn High School.
Was Mrs. Evans a teacher there?
Mrs. Evans was. She was class two, I think Mrs. Evans was.
That's right.
The actual infant teacher, if I can remember rightly, was a Miss Winnell. And I got a feeling she came from down Stamford Bridge. And we used to think she was very strict, I suppose. In these days, it was a good thing, but I know she was a very good teacher.
Right.
But you are right, David. Mrs. Evans was a teacher there, and Mr. Salmon was the head teacher. Another thing I can tell you about the junior school, David, is my mother was if you'd like to call it, a dinner lady. When she first started, they used to cook the meals. And they used to transport the meals from there to Beamartley, I presume, Witchingford. I don't quite know, but I know the meals went out. And Mum and another lady called Mrs. Smith used to cook the meals. And they were transported out by a taxi firm in Aberley called Ernie Flella. Wow. Norwood's the milk people, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And going back to childhood days at school, my nan was a cleaner at the school. That's Mrs. Millward, was a cleaner. She used to clean the school. But going back to Red Marley Hill Climb, you were saying about Ginger Smallman cleaning the hill climb. Now, Ginger Smallman and his family used to live at the top of Red Marley Hill Climb at a house right at the very top. And Nan always used to say they never had a clock. When the smoke went up the chimney, when Nan lit the fires in the school, that was the time the children had got to come to school. When I can always remember that. And I do think now the foundations are still there of the old house. I haven't been up there for donkey's years, but I think they are there.
That's right.
Then they used to put the milk bottles to thaw out in the winter. When they were froze, when the ice, you know, the milk was sticking up through the top of the milk.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I was not a great favourite of milk. I didn't like it, but yeah. We used to put her Wellingtons there to dry, and you know. But in those days, if there was 3 foot of snow, you still went to school. Like these days, it's all closed. But now we used to go.
I don't remember it, but some people are telling me there used to be a flagpole.
Yes,
there was.
You're quite right, David. Yes, there was. There was a flagpole where the school stands now. As the drive goes up and bends round, it was right on the very corner.
Right.
There was also a cricket pitch years ago out on the, which is now the playing field sort of thing. It was an area which was rough in my day, you know, not kept tidy like it is now. But in the middle, there was a little area which they used to use as a cricket pitch. The school used that, I mean. But now it's all been, like, opened and planned.
I have a recollection that the school field...
Like, I suppose my gran would have gone to school there. I don't know about Grandad, if Grandad would have gone. I don't think Grandad would have. Nan did, I know, definitely went there. Mum went there. I went there. And my son, which is Robert Howe, my wife and I had a son, Robert, he went to school there. So there's quite a few generations gone through the Whitley School. People, I should say.
Excellent. Do you have any recollection of that fleet of coaches that Mr. Moore used to have?
Oh, yes. Great recollection of Mr. Moore.
Green and cream, were they?
That's correct, David, yes. And every year we had a trip to the seaside. We used to have If I got a right recollection, there used to be, was there a school in Little Whitley or not? I can't vaguely remember if there was. Anyway, we used to have these coaches. And of course, it was a big highlight in those days. You know, your parents take you to the seaside in Moore's coaches. We used to set off, or, I don't know, we'll say 7 o'clock in the morning, probably reach Weston-super-Mare about 1 o'clock. You know, Bernard Baldwin, George Jones was another coach driver. John Rees, he was another one. Oh, yeah, that was Fred Trandy. Yeah, that was a big experience. You know, and they were not the most luxurious coaches who you write about in today. No. Proper old bone-shaking things, you know.
But I understand Mr. Moore built a lot of them.
Oh, yes, he did, David, when he started the business. He built the coaches himself. I think those must have been some of the ones we went to the seaside with, I think. But every year that was a big event. Weston-super-Mare we used to visit, Barry Island, Porthcawl. I think we used to take it in turns to go around the different, you know, places. But that was a big thing. I presume it was paid for by the school. I can't vaguely recommend. If Mum and Dad had to put a donation, I would imagine they would have done. But I can't remember that.
Do you recall an annual sports day when Aberdeen used to play against Whitley?
Yes, David, I can
British
tell you
Legion
that.
Shield.
That's correct. And that was held at Aberdeen All Sports Grounds at the private school. Now, I can remember that. We used to have long jump. And a friend of mine, which is Tommy Cook, was a great friend of mine. We won the three-legged race, I can remember that, for 3 or 4 years. But the shield was presented to the winning school, and it was quite, you know, between Aberley and Great Whitley.
Yeah.
It would be very interesting to know whatever happened to that shield.
It would.
Because, you know, it was quite a big thing. It wasn't a small shield, it was a big shield. But we used to have the sports day, and then the parents used to bring a picnic and all the children have a picnic. But it was great rivalry between the two schools in those days. Long jump, relay, yeah. We used to go up twice, I think, before the actual sports day for like a practice. We'd go up late afternoon and have a practice just to get used to it, because we had nowhere like really down at the old school to practice. But it was a big thing. That used to come like the last week of term, you know, before they broke up for the summer holidays. Right, yeah.
Sail yard by the Underdouse.
Oh, yes.
Do you have any memories of
yes,
that?
Yes, yes. Last Friday in every month, there was a cattle sale there. You know, local farmers would bring their stock. If it was sold by Banks's, I don't know, but I would imagine it would be, because he was a local auctioneer, Jeer at Banks.
That's right.
But yes, that went on for a long, long time. I actually think some of the pens are still there, aren't they?
They always seem very substantial.
Oh,
pens,
yeah, they
so
were.
I wouldn't be surprised.
They were built out of railway sleepers, what I can recommend. You know. But no, that was a big thing. Of course, he was right next door to the Underdouse, and it was a good trade for the Underdouse in those days. There was a bowling green at the Underdouse. Dad used to mow it. I used to go and help him when I was older. But no, I don't know how many members there'd be, 20, 30, something like that. You've got Don Bowen, Richie Quarterman. I don't think Roy Cox was ever involved. But you had Don Dennis, which was Don's father. Old Mr. Austin. But a lot of the old ones, you know, in the village used to go, and then Dad used to have like a fixture list where one Saturday night there was a visiting team, say from Stottiston or Clibbery Mortimer or something like that. You used to play one home one Saturday and then you'd go away. I don't know if you do know any history of the Underdose Hotel. Anything about a man called Mr. Billy Austin, who actually owned, I don't know if he owned the hotel or he rented it. I've got a feeling he owned it. Back in the days when there used to be the court there, because there used to be a court, they used to hold the courtroom upstairs.
Oh, yes.
That's before they built the police station at Great Whitley. But Mr. Austin had it built, and he used to run, I think he run it for years and years and years. And when he retired, he built the house which is on the corner, which has now been developed with Olonier. And he lived there with his housekeeper until he died. And Mrs. Bridges, yes, was his housekeeper's name. But my recollection of old Mr. Billy Austin was he used to have a very old A, now would it be Austin A7? It was a short wheel-based truck sort of thing. He used to drive this about. There was only one door. He had to get in from the one side and slide along. It was an old bench seat. And I can always remember him that. And Mr. Austin used to have the barns down it.
Red Marley.
Yes, he used to have the barns down there if he rented them or what. I can't remember, but I know he used to keep his hay in there. And years ago, he was a landowner down at Whitley Court. For when, I can't tell you, but I can remember Dad saying, Mr. Austin used to own some of Whitley Court. Also, Rich Quarterman's father, Mr. Tom Quarterman, he owned a lot of the park.
Right.
And I think Payne's moved in, I think, after. No, no, correct me on that. It was Edwards. Wham Edwards came in, and then Payne's came after. And
Tommy Ward had something to do.
Tommy Ward's the one I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Tommy Ward, yes. Yeah.
Where Wham Edwards lived.
You're talking about Red Marley there. I was talking to Don Bowen a few weeks ago.
Oh, yes,
and
yeah.
Don could even recall the name of three cart horses that Mr. Austin had.
Oh, Red Marley. Oh, Don's a bit older than me, mind you. But no, I can't go back that far. Yeah. I can remember the horses.
Yeah.
I can remember the horses, his Shire horses he had, yes. But putting a name to them, no. Can't do that, David.
My
dad and I used to be supporters at Villa Park, and we used to take old, well, Billy Austin, and Mr. Austin to me, but everybody called him Billy, used to take him up to Villa Park. And he always used to have a bag of those very, very strong, round peppermints, extra strong peppermints. Oh, and he used to eat those like sweets.
They were.
Yeah. And not saying that, though, Don was another one who came with us up to Villa Park. Don, you remember? Yeah, there used to be Don, Mr. Austin, myself, my granddad and dad. We used to go to Villa Park. But Mr. Austin was a character in himself, like, you know. But I think his wife died very early when he had the 100 House Hotel. I think his wife died suddenly. But I think he carried the 100 House Hotel on many years after that, until he retired. And going back to the Bowls Club, in those days the 100 House Hotel was owned by a firm called Joel's Brewery from the Black Country. They had the 100 House Hotel and the Fleet Hotel, Old Fleet. They used to donate things to the Bowls Club. And I think the Bowls Club carried on until Joel's actually sold. I used to go with Dad, but Dad was a big one in the Air Rifle League. So Dad done it. Dad done it for years. He used to do the bar. There used to be a little room at the back, an hole in the wall, the thing. Arthur Tyler. And Arthur Tyler lived on the entrance to Red Marley Hill, climb on the corner.
With Floss.
Yeah, Floss Tyler was his wife. They had three children.
Four.
Bill, Peter, Margaret. Four children, Richard. Bill Tyler, he emigrated to Australia. Peter emigrated to Australia. Margaret and Richard, as far as I know, are still in this country. But yeah, there used to be great upheaval in those days, because Arthur always used to park this Jag in the entrance to the Red Marley Hill climb, and when people went in, he always moaned about moving it and kicked up a stink, you know, and one thing and another. And he was a character in himself. His trade was a builder. He was a builder. He was a bricklayer, carpenter. And he was a brother to Frank Tyler, which Frank had the coal round.
That's right. With Gilbert and...
With Gilbert. Another going on now, David, there was a man who used to work with Frank Tyler, a man named Fred Morris. Fred Morris was a local man. He used to deliver the coal with Frank, and they were two characters in themselves. When the schoolmaster was in the house, going back to this, when the schoolmaster was in the house, Mr. Salmon, Frank Tyler and Fred Morris were two characters on their own. When they delivered this coal, Mr. Salmon used to have a collie dog. And this collie dog used to be outside the house. When they used to, they'd go and they'd bang on the side of the doors and they'd shout. They used to make this dog bark. I know, and old Mr. Salmon used to curse them to kingdom come. But they kept on doing it. If they see anybody in the street in Stairport, they wouldn't politely say, "How do you do, are you?" They'd bawl at the top of their voices, you know. But Frank Tyler, the coal merchant, lived just below the 100 house. He owned one or two houses in Great Whitley. One he owned was up the Aberley Bank, which is the entrance where they used to go, where Don Bowen lived, right on the corner. Mm. Frank Tyler owned that, and that's where Fred Morris lived. And I think after Fred Morris left the coal round, he done a little bit in relief bar work. He used to go round these pubs, you know, if there was a landlord on holiday, Fred would step in. He was the sort of man who could turn his hand to anything. He could turn his hand to sheep shearing, anything like that, you know. He worked, he done a bit for the Hill House, Banks is at the Hill House, before he died. But no, he was quite a handy sort of man, Fred. But my recollection of banging on this door at this dog, and I, the old headmaster, used to cuss him to kingdom come.
You worked in Whitley, Terence?
David, yes, I did. I started work, don't ask me what year it was, David, it's a long time ago. I started at Major Talbot's. Now, Major Talbot was at the bottom of Red Marley Hill climb. I started work there when I was 15 years old. I'd been there at least 4 or 5 years, going up holidays, weekends, to help him when he came to leave school. He took me on full time, but he specialised in apples. That was his main thing. And I worked with a man called Alan Tuffley. He was another local chap from Great Whitley. Tuffleys were the big family in Great Whitley.
I can remember as a small child looking over the garden gate and you and Alan Tuffley coming from Major Talbot's for your dinner on your bikes.
That's right. That's
and then going day. Back up on That's your bikes afterwards.
Every day, yes, we used to come home for dinner. Yeah. I can recollect working for Major Talbot. Now, you'll have to correct me on this, David. 1963, something like that. We had a very bad winter. Snow, it snowed, started to snow Christmas time, and it went on for years.
Months.
And I can remember Major Talbot getting Alan Tuffley and I to chip the ice off his drive, because the drive was very steep.
Yes.
Up to where he lives. Well, it's still the original drive, I presume. But I can remember him getting us to chip this ice off there. We used to keep pigs up there, and we couldn't get any feedstuff delivered. The farthest they would come would be the 100 house, and Alan Tuffley and I used to have to fetch it on the tractor and trailer.
Mate, if I recall right, as a youngster, Major Talbot had a grey Land Rover, one of the very, very first
That's correct,
Land Rovers.
David. Long wheelbase. Yeah.
Is that the
bone shaker? Yeah. Yeah, I as I said, I was there when I started school. When I passed my driving test, I used to take the apples in this Land Rover, as you just said about, into the Worcester Market on a Tuesday morning, because he used to do it himself. And, but when I got a licence, he passed it on to me, because Alan Tuffley didn't have a driving licence, only for a tractor. But now we, you know, I started going with, well, it's my wife, which is my wife now. She was my girlfriend in those days. She used to come and pick currants at Major Talbot's. She used to help. Yeah, and they were great times. He used to have the people come in from Kidderminster. He used to hire a coach, one of old Moore's coaches. And they used to go up onto the, which would be the Birch and Coppice. He used to go round there and pick all the people up, and they used to come out and pick these currants by hand. And it was a big event. But his old bone shaker of a Land Rover, it was a proper bone shaker of a Land Rover. There was a couple who used to come in a caravan. They came for years and years. They used to park up at the bottom of Red Marley Hill Climb in their caravan, and they used to pick these currants. Now, if I remember rightly, their name was Boswell. They were a travelling family. Very, very clean, very, but they came for years and years and years picking these currants. And of course, they'd be picking currants before anybody else got there in the morning. They always wanted the best rows, you know. Funny what things you can think of, isn't it, when you start to think about it, yeah. And I actually worked for Major Talbot until I left there and went to work for Banks's at the Hill House. A job came vacant, and I bettered myself and went down there as a stockman come tractor driver, and I worked there for quite a few years, working for the two old ladies who owned the properties, Honor and Joan Banks, and their brother, which was Tony Banks, the auctioneer. Yeah, he used to run the property. He used to come in every morning, give us orders, what we got to do, and that's how it carried on. But the actual paying us was done by the two sisters. And when payday come, it was always a crew. You've never done that much overtime, have you? You know, there was another man as well. He used to work for Banks. It was called Nirk Cooper. He had quite a few children. They lived down the Rock Cottages, one of Banks's houses. Old George Compton. He was a very old, well, I say he was very old when I went to work there, but he'd worked for the Tony Banks's father, G. Herbert Banks.
Right.
G. Herbert Banks was the one who started the G. Herbert Banks auctioneering service. And old George could always tell me the tale. He used to have the horse and cart into Kidderminster Market, take the produce in, have a few jars, because George liked to a drop. And the old saying was the horse used to bring George back, and George would be lying on the cart fast asleep. George's sister used to live just past the filling station, Tibby Compton, and he used to go up there every night for his meals. George was a loner. He'd never been married. He lived in one of the cottages, which was, shouldn't say this really, but uninhabitable sort of thing. Mm. George used to not clear the ashes away from the fire grate. He'd just rake them out, you know. He never cleared anything away. But he used to shave in cold water, and he used to go to his sister's every night for his meals. She used to do his washing. But he was a proper character, proper real old character, where he'd worked with the horses, he'd ploughed with the horses, you name it, he'd done it. Anything he'd do, I think, for a bottle of beer, you know. Because when I went there to work, George semi-retired. He used to go up to Mrs. Banks, old Mrs. Banks, to get her firewood in. They didn't pay George because, you know, it was too... They used to give George a bottle of beer because George would think that was marvellous, you know.
I can remember when I left school and worked for Stiles's at Stamford Bridge very briefly.
You drove a lorry. Yes, I did. I had a spell drive working for Richie Quarterman. I think the wife and I were married then. And we lived in Lambton in those days. We'll go back to Major Talbot, yes. There was an engine, well, Richard Cole was his name. He was a farmer. He set up an agricultural business in Stairport-on-Severn. He sold international tractors. He bought this international tractor. And I know it was a pride and joy of Alan and myself, this international tractor.
I can give you a little bit of information
on that.
You can,
I thought you would.
Yes, I can. Yeah. As a 5 or 6 year old, Mum used to come to help with the blackcurrants.
I probably did. I can't remember your mum coming now.
Yes, she was there, and I'd be sent with a flask.
That's correct.
In the afternoon, and I'd go up the drive, as you've described.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd wait at the top of the drive until either you or Alan came back with the tractor to the buildings.
Yes, because we used to transport the...
You did?
The currants from Red Marley Hill Climb to where his buildings are. Yes.
And then I'd pop up, and you or Alan would say, do you want to ride over?
I can't remember that day.
Illegally, I'd go with you.
I bet you did, yeah.
And that tractor seemed so big to me then.
Oh, yeah.
But as you know, I own it now.
And I do. You done it up.
We do repairs on it. And when he passed away, I was lucky enough to be able to buy it.
Yeah, we spoke a bit about Major Talbot. If I get this right, Major Talbot's wife was a Wynne. Now, her father was a specialist, he was very, very high up. And I've got a feeling they bought all that ground and gave it to them when they got married. Because then they only had a small bungalow to start. I don't know, David, if you can remember it. The small bungalow. It was just a small bungalow. And then the Talbots had it extended. Now, can you actually remember it going on fire?
I can.
You can?
Yes.
Before you joined the fire service.
Oh, well, I was only a little boy then, looking out of the bedroom
window. It was burnt down, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah, 65 or 66.
Something like that. I can remember that, yeah. Yeah. But Major Talbot, he was a major. He smiled, you know, yourself. He spoke like a major, you know.
You don't tell David that when they had the fire, you went up there and you burnt your hands badly trying to save things.
Because when the fire started, where we lived at 6th Airport Road, like was just down the field from him, and of course, Talbot's is on fire. We rushed up there, run up there as children, like, you know.
As
youngsters, I'll put it like, you know. And we all get the stuff out, and I can remember burning the palms of my hands, dragging stuff out of the fire to help him. But I think it had all...
Oh, right.
Did Don
Did Don? No, he didn't.
It was not Windows Way, it was top of the hill.
No, where Don Bowen used to live, which you know where he used to live. To the right of there was a bungalow set into the trees. Now, Dr. Wynne had that bungalow built when he was a doctor. That's where he used to come to weekends or whenever. And I think it's through having that chalet there how he come to buy this ground at the orchards down in the bottom, because he actually owned all the hill right the way across. Red Marley Hill, Climb Hall, all belonged to Wynne's, and then it was turned over to Major Talbot.